Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season on now with match-winning deals.
Welcome to Sports Day. Great to have your company. And, of course, the hot topic for expert car air conditioning service you can rely on. You visit repcoservice.com was this morning when I think we all woke up and maybe turned on your device or your television news. And I was watching Nine this morning and I saw that Tiger Woods lucky to be alive after suffering severe injuries to both legs in a horror crash that saw him cut from the wreckage with an axe and a prying tool. Paul Hazelby, it was something that none of us wanted to hear, but importantly, we have got a statement tonight from his management, and it seems that he has got through the worst of it.
It's positive, Carl. It looks like he'll make a recovery. Probably not a full recovery, and I don't think he'll ever get back to where he was as a professional golfer, but surgery was done on his leg. There was some screws inserted also throughout his ankle as well. So very, very lucky to be alive, but the positive is that he will go forward, and we haven't seen the last of Tiger Woods, which is a great thing.
No, and let's hope he is able to get back and play some competitive golf, although I reckon that'll be the furthest thing from his mind right now. 922-11882, if you'd like to join us tonight. You'll be blown away with car air conditioning service at Repco Authorised Service. Book at repcoservice.com. Hayes, Wednesday wine time. Now, let's get in nice and early with the wine, everyone, and we've got a carton of beer to give away thanks to Gage Road. So if you want to put in your Wednesday wine, ring now, 922-11882. Sullivan Logistics, 3 votes for storage and overnight freight. They never say no, and I know Hayes has been itching to launch this tonight.
Well, yesterday, Carl, we had some heated debate, didn't we? You and a lot of callers came in with their thoughts about the rule changes, the manning of the mark. Well, today we had our first intra-club game, or a proper game between Hawthorn and the Western Bulldogs. Now, the Hawks came back to win that one, 15-7 to 12-10. So 22 scoring shots each, which is slightly up on what we saw in 2019. But I'm not going to say that obviously it has improved the game just yet because it's a small sample case. But there were some that were at the game, and I'm proud to report that there's only one 50-metre penalty given away throughout that game. And a report from Fox Footy, and I know their job is footy and they want to paint a good picture about the rules, and they said, yes, it was one pre-season clash, but the ball consistently zipped from one end of the ground to the other and often through the corridor. There was little down-the-line footy with few possession chains occurring along the boundary line. So I think that is a positive that we've had only one game, only one free kick paid at the moment, and there were some seen improvements throughout the style of game. So I'm not having a big dig, but I did say last night, let's just wait and see how this pans out.
I just wonder how many people are maybe tuning in online. There's going to be the North Melbourne clash going to be available to you online. We can have a look at it because I think it's important that we talk about this. Described as entertaining, free-flowing, high-scoring contest at Witten Oval today, which Alistair Clarkson's men surge late to win. Look, I'm still not convinced. I still personally, as you heard me last night, I'm not going to flip-flop. I am going to be straight down the line and say I don't like it and I don't think it's going to work. But anyway, we'll have to wait to see with
you
the season.
You said last night you'd be open.
Open to what?
To seeing if it works.
Yeah, I just said that.
No,
I just
you said you not don't like it.
No, I'm not
like
going to. I don't like it and I'm not going to flip-flop
but
right now. I still don't think it's going to work. And as I put on the desk certain parts, right? So let's just wait and see how things pan out. But there is going to be, I feel anyway, there's going to be a lot of frustration around this particular move, but you've got to give it a go before we'll know. What else do you have to whine about tonight? 922-11882. I think that we should be having a bit of a whine about the AFLW and the women's season because it is going to be massively disrupted. And for me, Hayes, if what we're hearing today is true, that they are going to play the same teams because they can't get in and out of Victoria because of COVID-19, then please.
Our restrictions, Carl, are wreaking havoc with the fixturing of the AFLW at the moment. So announced today, and there's still work to be done on this, but the AFLW season still has a remaining 5 games to go. And currently our West Aussie teams have played all of the teams outside of Victoria because of the restrictions that have been in place. So it's great that the AFLW have gone that far. But now they cannot play the Victorian teams because it requires either West Coast and Fremantle to go into Victoria and then come back, which they would then have to quarantine for 14 days. They can't do that, and we can't have the Victorian teams come in to Western Australia at the moment because they would have to quarantine. So the AFL are looking at a scenario where you have a competition completed by playing against those same teams. So we've seen Fremantle play against Adelaide in recent times. They played Brisbane, they played Gold Coast, they played the West Coast Eagles as well, that they would essentially round out playing those teams again. So you don't play some of the other teams, and there's some good teams that are undefeated, like Collingwood in Victoria. Now, on the back of last year where they didn't complete the season, how would you feel about that in terms of integrity of that competition, and would there be an asterisk to the eventual winner?
Well, probably. I mean, poor old Freo last year probably were deserved winners, and they go through undefeated and they never get to where they should have got to. So there's still a question mark over last year. Look, I just hope it doesn't happen again. That's what I don't want to see happen. Oh, look, I personally don't see why they can't fly in and out of these areas and actually play in safe quarantine and then come home and be allowed out. You know, the Wildcats, I believe, we'll have a chat to Trevor Gleeson tonight, are out and about in Victoria. Now, if they're then required, if they're allowed out and about in Victoria and then they have to, when they come home to Western Australia, quarantine for 14 days, please. I mean, have we got an election coming up here in Western Australia? Because I tell you what, I'm starting to get a little bit irritated by it. I'm really starting to get irritated by it because we've actually had one case of community spread, which is that one bloke, which they stuffed up with hotel quarantine in the first place, right?
Mm.
That's the only one we've had. So, and why we've got, and this is another argument, why we've got people with COVID actually being housed in our city is another argument. But when are we going to actually allow businesses and sports organisations to get back to having crowds, even if they're with masks, right, watching sporting events so that they can actually start to recoup the losses? Because there's a lot of hospitality businesses, which is what sport is. It's a hospitality business and entertainment. So all those entertainment industries out there where you've got a band that wants to go along and play at a bar, where that bar can only have, instead of 500 people, 300 people, all of a sudden the economy of scale doesn't work. So that musician isn't getting the work. Those bar staff that normally work there aren't getting the work. And it's the same here at this facility where we're broadcasting from tonight, here at Optus Stadium. If it's only half full, it means that those clubs, West Coast, Freo, and everyone else who wants to come and operate here is restricted by what they can actually reach.
And you've got to strike in the good times, don't you? It's a good time right now for COVID in this state. So allow them to have maximum capacity, because there might come a time in 3 months when it's not a good time in our state where they have to go back to reduce numbers. So why allow it now? I think it is time to
make that change. Blind Freddy could have shut down our state when our state was shut down. And given that we're so isolated, I mean, people are banging their chest and saying, oh, well, the Premier's done a great job. Well, it's about time we started to have a look at a few of the other things that are bubbling around, given that we're leading into a state election right now. So 922-11882. I'm passionate about it. Are you? We go to Peter Nedlands, who joins us first tonight. Pick up the phone and have a chat, please. We want you to air your thoughts tonight. G'day, Pete.
Right, the man on the mark. I think they've got it 100% wrong. It's completely back to front. I think this has been pushed by the umpires because they can't get it right. My understanding, the rule from way back, was that you stand the mark, the player that is about to kick it goes straight back and straight forward, and as long as he doesn't go over the mark, they don't call play on. But the cagey players have been going backwards and then going sideways. And what's happening, my understanding, is if it took one step left or right of that direct line over the mark, the umpire then should call play on, but the umpires haven't been calling that over the years, and the players have been backing off the mark and going sideways to open up the angle and make it easier. Now, the umpires have only just got to call it as it is, and the rule's been there straight away, problem solved.
Yeah, I don't think we can blame the umpires with this. They're just implementing the rules that have been brought in by the caretakers of our game, and whether they should be our caretakers, that's a different argument. But I think when the rule did come in, this one, the standing the mark, there was going to be some leeway with movement from side to side. That was what Steve Hocking said when it was first announced back in November. But since then, they've actually said, no, no leeway. You have to have your feet planted. The only thing you can do is jump up.
Jump up. Sorry. Let's go to Dave in Ocean Reef. Hello, Dave.
Carl, you've always had a straight down the line opinion. Paul, I think you're a bit too diplomatic. mate, this rule, this hockey has to go. Lachlan has to go. This is crazy. This is the pinnacle. They can't do this sort of stuff. They are ruining the game. Listen to a bloke that rang up on Liam Bartlett's program this morning, and he said, you know, I'm a coach and whatever, and the kids are so confused that they're leaving the game. They go and play basketball because they can play basketball like their stars, and they just like the stars of the Wildcats. This is the pinnacle, mate. This hockey has to go. Why would you do this to the game? I mean, it's not even contact being a man on the mark. This is ridiculous.
I think it'll help the stars of the game. Personally, I think the goal scoring will go up from the key forwards. They'll get more opportunities because the ball movement will be quicker and the defences won't be able to fold back. But you're entitled to your opinion. Thanks, Dave.
Good on you, Dave.
Strong from Dave.
Well, I'd love to bet you, but you've refused, so that's okay.
We've had a game today, and there's been not one person whatsoever saying anything.
And how many goals were kicked?
Well, there was...
Did it change the scoring?
15 goals.
Yeah, 15 goals.
To 12-10.
Right, so we'll see. We'll see. Mm. We'll see how many goals are kicked and see whether it actually does change it. Shane, hello.
Hey, boys, love your show. Good stuff again. So, hey, Langers, I'm taking a pot shot at you, mate. You want to keep politics and sport separate. There's no room to be talking about elections and all that stuff when we're talking about sport, all right? That's something that we do to get away from the real-world dramas, all right?
So, well, the problem is, though...
That's what I'm with you tonight, mate.
Yeah, no, that's okay. You can have a whine at me, but the problem is, mate, is that sport is being dictated to by politics, though, Shane. That's the point I'm making.
Everything is, Carl. Everything is. But we shouldn't be doing that. So anyway, good show, fellas.
All right, mate. Okay. Well, I'll try and keep the politics out of it, but at the same time, it's important to acknowledge that we are being dictated to by a lot of what's going on. And look, I think we all understand. I reckon we've been at it for long enough to understand it. I'll keep talking about the sport then. Well, let's keep it on the field. Whatever you'd like to throw in, do it next here on Sports Day. It's 19 after 6.
Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals.
Welcome back to the program. 922-1882. Wednesday wine. We're getting into that for Sullivan Logistics, your trusted storage and overnight freight expert. Sullivan Logistics in it for the long haul. We head to Beldivis. And Pete, g'day.
G'day, boys. How you going? And now, Carl, I spoke to you last year about mid-March, just before the season was starting, and I told you they closed the season down. I said my wife's a registered nurse in the medical field, and I said that was the end. And I remember telling you, and then the next person that spoke to you after that said, we just want the football, and I remember you telling him on the radio that you had parents in that age group. The bottom line is this vaccine is not. We're behind the eight ball. We haven't kept the Western Royals already had it. They're nearly ready for the second stage in the Western countries. We haven't even had the first dose. It can still take off. We've got winter coming, and if it gets into the elderly over here, you'll have the same sort of genocide you had in Victoria. So we're getting ahead of ourselves if we think we should just open up. McGowan's done a good job, but he's had to use a hammer to fix it. But the bottom line is, don't get ahead of yourself, mate. It can still take off, I'm telling you. My wife told me the same.
All I'm suggesting, Pete, is that we allow crowds to go to our own venues here in WA. I'm not saying open up to the rest of Australia. What I'm wanting is that if we've got 12,000 that are allowed to go to HBF Stadium to watch the Force, why can't we have 20? What's the difference between 12 and 20, please?
35 and 60. I agree with you.
You know? What's the difference?
I agree with you there, actually. There's no COVID in the state.
No, so what I'm saying is then can't we just open up our state and allow those hospitality businesses, which includes our sports and sports clubs, to actually allow people to get along and enjoy their sport? Yeah.
Well, sorry, I actually misunderstood your point, but that is right. I think in this state, even my wife said, we're COVID-free, and that's thanks to McGowan, we should be opening up. That's right. But we can't just open up whole households to the rest of the country. You've seen what's happened over there.
No, I was not advocating that. I was purely saying within WA to allow our sporting clubs to get back to what we would call somewhere near trading normal. Thanks, Pete. Good on you, mate. To the Mouse. Hello, how are you going?
The great Carl and the great Hazelby. There's twice this week, but I didn't mean to ring up. But I heard the gentleman say before the umpires have had something to do with this rule change. Well, my information is the umpires weren't even consulted about this new rule change that just came in. and they're trying to speed up the game and have more goals quick, like you said. But I agree with Hayes. There's got to be a little bit of lateral movement. Otherwise, it will be a shambles. So imagine the last minute of a grand final, the bloke accidentally moves by half a metre, 50 metre, and the team wins the grand final just because of this little... There needs to just be a little bit of movement going on there.
Now, the second point is... There won't be, mate. This is the point. You have to be a statue. Hayes hasn't been advocating that you can move. He's been saying, no, you can't.
Well, I think you need a consistent. So if you do give leeway, then you're going to have problems because there's going to be vision going back, looking at games, saying, well, how come this one wasn't paid? Should have been 50. We should have got two goals from that. So I think it's pretty simple from a player's perspective. You just man the mark. You don't worry about what's going on in front of you, except for jumping up if you think that the ball might touch your hands or you want the force of that kicker to kick it over your head. And, look, the video footage yesterday of the Essendon bomber, Langford, I just thought that was stupid because they would have been training that all pre-season, and then the first taste he gets of it, he makes a big blue like that, and I reckon his coach would come down hard on him for that.
I mean, one of my old teammates is on this Laws Committee, Jason Ball. I might try and get hold of him and see whether he's prepared to come on. Nicole Livingston, Steve Hocking, of course, Brett Murphy, who's the General Manager of Player and Stakeholder Relations. These are the sorts of people that are on that particular board. Good on you, Mouse. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Rob, who's out in the bush in Corder. G'day, Rob.
How are you, Carl?
I'm good, mate.
Yeah, hey, you going? You all right?
No, I'm great.
Good on you, mate. Hey, about this opening up things and all that, I just think maybe if we can get this vaccine rolled out a bit quicker, that's what we should be telling the government. Get that rolled out as quick as we can. And once we got sort of even half the population of the metro area sort of done, you know, then we might sort of, you know what I mean? Break the...
Yeah, we get you. I mean, you know, obviously to get the vaccine gives us some comfort that it'll save us from essentially like flu vaccines and others from getting the serious effects of these sorts of illnesses. But it won't prevent people that are having the vaccine from actually acquiring the disease. And what it won't prevent is you from acquiring the disease and spreading it, which is why we're all encouraged to go and have it. That's the important part. But Hayes, you know, it's a situation which is still going to take a lot of time. And for sporting clubs, for example, we've got the AFL season that is going to kick off on the 21st of March. West Coast play Gold Coast. If they can only have 32,000 people in the stadium, it means that a lot of those people have already pledged their money that were looking forward to going to the footy this year are not going to be able to go to the footy because they've got 60,000 seated members. Freo have got 50,000 seated members, right? So all of a sudden, footy clubs are going to be behind the eight ball. So they're going to have to continue to cut costs, which is going to put even more pressure on. Quick one from Norm in Subi before we head to a break. G'day, Norm.
G'day, guys. Hey. This morning, Gareth Parker, who, you know, was a WAFL umpire, he said his word is that the umpires definitely were not contacted and he brought into this and he would have the right contacts. Can I just say, what they're doing is turning the man on the mark into a witch's hat because the rule is that you, at the moment, if you go forward before the umpire calls play on, then you've encroached the mark. But it makes no sense to say that you can't move laterally. I think so long as you don't go forward, it would still be an aid. But what it means is if you're standing on the mark and the player with the ball, Paul, he's not necessarily going to kick over your head. He then runs off at an angle to get around you. You can't move laterally. I accept you should maybe not be able to move forward. But you can't. What do you just? He runs off. What if the umpire says play on? Do you just stand there? Are you then free to grab him? What happens?
As soon as the umpire says play on, you're free to move
forward.
Any direction.
Well, I can't see the point. What's going to happen then? The way this is going, I think if you do get these more goals kicked, well, if any full forward comes out with 100 goals, it's going to be a small asterisk next to it, I think.
Good on you, Norm. Thanks for calling. Do you agree? Disagree? Norm makes a really good point. Wednesday wine, have your say. That's what we are here for. Gage Rose Carton of Beer to give away tonight. 922-11882 is the number. Back soon.
Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals.
Righto, let's whip through a few more calls. You can join in 922-11882 to Greg in Inglewood. Good evening, mate.
G'day, guys. Hey, it's good the AFL make these rules and stuff like that, but it's one thing they have to forget, that the rules filter down to community football. So when you get to the amateurs and you're in, let's say, C3, it's club umpires. And a lot of the times the umpires actually can't keep up with the game anyway, so they can't set the mark. It's just going to cause so much of a drama, and there's already so much abuse towards umpires and that, and also a fight in the lower leagues. I think it's something that the AFL are actually forgetting, and I think it's going to destroy the grassroots football.
Yeah, that's a good call. I didn't give much consideration to that. And the umpires at that level, I don't think it'll destroy grassroots football, but it's going to make it more difficult for those in those positions, worse decisions, and that can lead to unhappiness, I guess, in the game. I think football will always survive, but look, there'll be teething problems, but I still believe in time we won't be talking about this much, because I think the game will be in a better place, because really, I've been disillusioned. I've spoken to other people, younger people, about football in recent times. They don't have the same passion for it, and I think some of that is because they're watching some boring games based around the ball just staying in the same part of the ground, moving along the boundary line, throw it in, and not being free-flowing and open footy.
But, you know, the problem, too, is on the back of what Greg has just spoken about, is that you've got these AFL administrators banging their chests and getting paid bonuses on increased numbers of participation and people coming through the turnstiles. And, well, they're fixturing more games in time slots that are enabling that to happen. They've also expanded the competition to include extra teams. And you've got some growth happening, even though it's small, up at Gold Coast. You're up to about 10,000 members now and into Greater Western Sydney. So we've seen that growth. But, look, for me, you've just got to listen to what people are ringing in about tonight to understand that there is a fair bit of dissatisfaction out there. And I think that for the fan, they seem to be getting pushed further away. Like the same interaction, say, when I was a player, where we used to go back to the club and meet with all the fans, it hardly happens anymore. You hardly see the players. They basically go and get in an ice bath and do their thing. And generally, by the time you get that 1 hour after a footy match, you've got to go home. And there aren't the, say, the club facilities like there is at Fremantle, like at the South Fremantle Footy Club, where, you know, I'd come back after playing Subi and we'd go in the bar and have a drink together, even though we would have been smashing each other out in the field all afternoon. And you get in front of your crowd who wouldn't come and punch you in the head. But now, mate, that social interaction part of it, maybe it's gone
turned to social media interaction, hasn't it? It's all done online.
And it's all business. It's all become big business. So the fan, I think, is being pushed further and further away from the big business machine that the AFL's become.
But we have had rule changes recently, haven't we? We had the 5 metre rule that came in, and that got people offside, but then sort of players and umpires found a way to get through that. Now, I know this is bigger than that, but let's just wait and see before we make our mind up on it.
Let's go to Simon in Spearwood. G'day, mate.
G'day, guys. Look, I tend to agree with Hayes on this. If you take a mark on the boundary line, at the moment, your man on the marks basically goes 10 metres inbound to stop your kick on the angle and forces you down the line. Now, why should the person either winning the free kick or taking the mark be disadvantaged and not be able to, you know, take off through the middle, keep the game flowing? Because at the moment, you take a mark on the boundary line, your defender automatically goes 10, 15 metres inboard, although on the same line as the mark, and really disadvantages you and puts you at a disadvantage and makes you force it down the line.
Well, two things happen here. One is, as you said, the guy on the inside stopping the inside kick, and then there's another defender that's set up down the line stopping the kick down the line. So in the end, the player has two choices: to go back and sideways, which we don't love, or to go long down the line, which then that ball finds its way over the boundary line, then we have a restart and away we go. So that's
100%
my frustration.
So this, why I think opening it up and allowing the player to play on, or being able to take that 15, 20-metre kick inwards, will open the game up and stop the stoppages down the line and the continual boundary throw-ins.
Remember when Geelong dominated? They started their era going back to 2007. It was built on that. They were just going through the corridor and nobody could stop them. But over time, everybody got better defensively by moving their positioning on the mark and also the way that the fence is set up as well.
We will give the Carton a beer to Simon in Spearwood.
Just because,
he agreed with you. So that's good. And we'll see. Look, I'm prepared to give it a go. What I have stated very clearly is I don't think it'll work. And I don't think it'll change what the AFL is attempting to try and change here by opening the game up and allow more scoring. I might be wrong and I'm happy to eat the pie if I have to, but we'll wait and see. Welcome back to Sports Day, and great to have a special guest on the program. He is the president of the Melbourne Football Club. Used to be chairman, but he is the president these days. And for Nutrien Water, providing affordable water-wise solutions at every home, Glenn Bartlett joins us on the program. Welcome, Prez. How are you going?
Yeah, good, Carl and Paul. Great to be with you.
Thanks very much. Yeah, thanks very much for your time, mate. Well, a lot has transpired since the last time Melbourne was in Western Australia. It was the West Coast Eagles and Melbourne clash. I'll remember it forever, mate, because there was nobody there virtually. And I was sitting in the grandstand in my commentary box calling that game with no fans. It seems like it was only yesterday, but it was an unbelievable change to the football landscape as we know it.
Yeah, absolutely, Carl. And, you know, certainly, you know, it was a very challenging time and times and then the impact on people. And I can recall, you know, it just happened and it happened so quickly, but there's so much happened since then. I think the hardest thing, well, I think the industry and the club should be proud of, you know, the way we got through the season last year. But there were a lot of hard calls that had to be made and, you know, a lot of good people lost their jobs in the footy industry. And you know, hopefully we're coming out of it now.
Glenn, how did your club fare financially through that period? We had some results today from Sydney and the Giants. $10 million loss between those two clubs. But for Melbourne, how was it?
Yeah, Paul, we certainly, when it first hit, you know, we swung into weekly board meetings for monthly and a crisis working group. And we were looking at an $8 to $10 million loss straight up. We got it back to 2.9. And that was through a lot of hard work between the exec, our board, but also wonderful support from our commercial partners and members. And we'd made a decision a couple of years ago to exit Pokies, which was 2 or 3 years of work to get to that point. So, you know, we're in good shape in terms of cash reserves, and we wiped out our debt for the only second time in 20 years. So, you know, we've come out of it, you know, feeling in pretty good shape, although we're not out of it yet. There's still a lot of uncertainty in terms of what's in front of us. But, yeah, we were looking at $8 to $10 million. As I say, it's a result of a lot of work, got it back to 2.9, which is still a big number, and it's not sustainable. So, you know, hoping this year, you know, we'll get crowds back and, you know, we'll have a thriving comp again with fans, with all their fans there and we're through it. But, yeah, we'll just have to wait and see.
How are things looking at Casey now? Because, you know, you look at a lot of the clubs around the land, mate, including our two here, they've got state-of-the-art facilities.
So we're working on our home base project in the MCG precinct and working very hard with the Vic government, AFL, MAPT, the Melbourne Olympic Park Trust, on that. And we're making progress. So we're hoping to have, you know, some concrete news soon. Casey, part of our strategic plan was to redevelop, upgrade Casey down there. So we've now got, you know, really good gym, indoor kicking area and good facilities down there, at MCG size oval. And look, thank goodness, because at Amy Park, one of the issues is we share the facilities with, in terms of pools and, you know, a very big gym, but with Storm and Victory, and of course with COVID and all the protocols, it's been necessary to relocate over the summer our team, our men's team, down to Casey for training, so we can meet all the protocols. But, you know, that's, I guess, long-term the vision, you know, our home base, walking distance from the MCG with social club, et cetera, all under the one roof, and sort of our secondary campus, if you like, you know, down at Casey. And it's also very important for our women's program as well in terms of playing home games and the like.
Now, you've just had your AGM a couple of days ago, a couple of newly inducted life members. But what was it like, given that a large number of those people were not able to actually physically be there?
Yeah, look, another challenge. You know, certainly whether it's Zoom or, you know, WebEx conferences have really got us through this period, and I think it probably changed the world, Carl and Paul, for forever. It was certainly different where, you know, we had a fan forum as well in December, and you know, the AGM, we probably had 400 or 500 members online, but you don't have that in-room interaction, you know, so it was different. You know, we tried to cover all the same ground, you know, dealt with, you know, probably a good hour of questions, but yeah, it was definitely more challenging, and I'm really looking forward to, you know, with those sort of, you know, meetings, a lot of what we do, you know, back to the face-to-face.
Max,
yeah, so sort of meetings, yeah.
Yeah, Max Gorn and Tommy McDonald, though, inducted into your Life membership group.
Yeah, Carl, two great stories of really, I think, you know, resilience, courage, you know, a lot of ups and downs along the way. Both boys have a bit of talent as well, and, you know, they're both drafted around 09, you know, 2010, so, you know, done their, you know, 10 years, and, of course, Tommy's played over 170 games now, but both, you know, great leaders for our club, and really a great honour. When you think in their 163-year history, there's only been about 250 Life members. You know, certainly those, the boys, they really appreciated, you know, the honour of being made Life members of a football club.
Glenn, what are your expectations and the board's expectations on field this year, given 2 years ago you rose up the ladder, played finals? Last year you missed by 2 points, but I know you've had some early injuries, but what's the board thinking here?
Yeah, Paul, we last year put out a four-year strategic plan, and both for our men's and women's teams, the expectation set was to play finals each year and deliver a premiership for each team in that four-year period. Those expectations haven't changed. Obviously, our women's team last year played their first finals and ticked the box. The men's fell just short, so that was a fail last year. But the expectation is to play finals, and this year, in terms of the list, you know, we have changed our coaching structure, you know, a bit over the summer, and that's great to have Choco Williams, Adam Uzay into that group, and Jordan Lewis as well. So, you know, really to, I would say top four, but to push as deep as and high as we can, obviously. But we've set, you know, par so far. We expect to play finals. We fell just short last year. Those Cairns games, you know, killed us in the end. But, you know, we've nailed our mask to that, those expectations, and can't wait for it to start.
It seems that all the Victorian presidents have had a bit to say about the push of Tasmania. You're a knowledgeable man. What do you think about this? And do you think it's something the AFL should explore and obviously complete at some stage?
That's it's a hot topic there. Look, I guess my, I'd probably leave specifically, you know, the Tasmanian case and, you know, the government and North and obviously Hawthorn have got, you know, really direct interest there, leave that alone. But I guess from where I sit, Paul and Carl, I really think sort of adding one team and making it 19 doesn't, from a fixturing and, you know, revenue perspective, doesn't make a lot of sense. I'd love to see the strategy set for, okay, 2030 or 2025, you know, the competition ideally should be 20 teams, or the number's going to be 18, or it's going to be 22 by 2040, and then work from there. So, you know, you're looking at licences for two teams, which makes sense in terms of fixturing, you know, adding a game and revenue in terms of TV rights, rather than having, you know, the 19. So I probably think the first thing the AFL and the clubs need to do is set the size of what they see the, you know, ideal size of the AFL competition is. And then go from there. But certainly a lot of wonderful players, including from Melbourne, have come out of Tassie. A lot of wonderful players have come out of the Northern Territory as well. So I'd like to see the vision set for the overall size of the comp, and then, you know, work back in an orderly way from there. It may not happen that way, but that's my view on it.
Your team has been playing matches in the Northern Territory, and you would have done a lot of work with them. Do you think they could sustain one of those licences?
Oh, look, again, you know, you look at what the requirements are set and so forth. But in terms of, you know, talent and passion for footy, you know, it's if you haven't been to the Territory, it's just such a wonderful place. And we were lucky, you know, played in Darwin for 10 years. But, the you know, the Heart of the Nation game at Alice is just such a special place. And we've just completed a community project, 80Ks from Alice, where we've work with a number of partners, including the MCC and commercial partners, to create the MCG in the desert, which you know, is really changing the lives for, you know, that community. And we've seen the photos and transformation. So there's such a passion for footy, such a lot of talent, and also such a lot of work still to do in the Territory. I'd love to end up seeing a fully national comp. You know, with Tassie and the MT, you know, covered as well. But I go back to, you know, I guess the starting point, what's the overall vision for the competition in terms of size and number of teams? And, you know, I love the Cracker Brothers growing up, and I'm a bit of a fan of let's do it in pairs.
Yeah, well, so am I. Yeah, so am I. But, you know, obviously you just spoke about something there, North Melbourne. You know, North Melbourne are being rumoured as being one that's going to be pushed out, and they're going to keep it at 18 teams and get them down to Tassie. But we'll talk about that another time, mate. Thank you very much for your time tonight. Really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll see you at some... I don't mean to laugh here. Hopefully we'll see you at some stage in the flesh here in Perth. I know you've got business interests here, and you've got a holiday home down south that you haven't seen that almost got blown away in a cyclone, and you can't get back to even visit it.
Thanks, Carl. You sound like you're enjoying this, Carl.
No, I'm not enjoying it. It's just the facts, though, of how much, yeah, of how difficult it's been to get into WA.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it is. Yeah, I can't wait, mate. I'll look his up when I get through the border.
Yep.
And it'd be good to catch up. But, yeah, thanks again and all the best. Look forward to catching up.
Good on you. Glenn Bartlett, president of the Melbourne Football Club. And you can visit your local Nutrien Water experts today, or you can shop online at nutrienwater.com.au. We'll be back with more of Sports Day. Righto, Hayes, just ahead of the 7 o'clock news here on Sports Day, a weekend claim for Nova. Show them your crack today. Call 13-22-34.
Fremantle finally to beat the West Coast Eagles in the practice game coming up. I know it's not the official practice game, but still important. I just think they're a little bit further advanced with a lot of their players getting continuity and minutes throughout the preseason. So Fremantle to beat West Coast.
All right. So I am going to have a look at the racetrack, Hayes, and I am going to go for a horse by the name of Tagaloa, which is running at Flemington. It's in the Australian Guineas, and I'm really looking forward to it getting the chocolates on the weekend. That is my weekend claim for Novus, the clear choice in auto glass repair. Show them your crack today. Call 13 22 34. And we have some great guests coming your way after 7 tonight. Adam Voges is going to join us, fresh off signing a new contract. That's what the paper says. We'll find out if that is the case. Trevor Gleeson will join us, fresh off 2 wins on the weekend and in the last couple of days. Ash Prescott, who is our Waffle on Wednesday coach that will feature, and John Greer, who's a junior coordinator at the Joondalup Country Club. So all of that coming your way soon here on the program. We'll see you after the news. Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have your company. And off the top of this hour is the bloke that's just signed a new deal. That's what I read in the newspaper at the West Australian Cricket Association. His name is Adam Voges. Another 3 years at the helm. Well done, mate.
Good evening, guys. I think that the paper might have jumped the gun a little bit there. I can say that officially that isn't the case just at this stage, but certainly the talks have been really positive, and hopefully we'll have something, if not next week, the week after.
All right. So on that note then, are you still comfortable with coaching across all formats, which is what you're currently doing at the moment?
Yeah, it's what I've done for the last 3 years. I love my job. I love the fact that I can run our programs here in WA with both West Australia and the Scorchers, and yeah, it keeps me busy. There's no doubt about that. But, I certainly thoroughly enjoy being able to run and be the head of both those programs.
Would you love to replace Justin Langer once again in the future, or maybe take on some of those IPL coaching positions?
I'm pretty happy at the moment, Hayes, to be honest. As a coach, I'm only 3 years into it. So there's still plenty for me to do here. And, with the way that our guys are going and our programs here in WA, I'm, I'm really excited about what this next little period can hopefully bring. And, yeah, there's still plenty of work to be done.
And look, you've got a young family too. I mean, JL's in probably a little bit of a different situation now that his kids are a little bit older. But with the time away from home and all of those factors, even you've had to endure it domestically, mate. We're not really out of it yet. It's a lot to consider, isn't it, when you're talking about doing what you do?
Yeah, that's right. It's one of the parts of the job is that there is an amount of travel, and certainly Justin and the Australian team do a lot more than what we do domestically, albeit this year with COVID and bubbles and hubs and that sort of thing. It's certainly been different, and we've spent a lot more time away this year. But, yeah, look, that's part of the job, so you've got to enjoy it when you're home, and I'm certainly doing that at the moment.
Now, how well's Cameron Green going? He comes off a double century in grade cricket, and you today, I believe, I'm looking at a picture of you and Greeny, and inducted into the Test Player Walk. That's nice.
Yeah, that's right. Anyone who's been down to the Wacker and the back of the Lily Marsh down there sees the walk of all the West Australian Test players, of which Cameron's our latest addition. And, yeah, it was really nice to unveil the photo of him today and to have all the players and staff and his family there. I think that was a really special moment. But, yeah, he comes into this Shield, Graham, in great form. Scored a double 100 for CB on the weekend. I actually asked him on Monday morning. I said, you must have hit him pretty well. He's first thing he said to me was that the outfield was really slow and he probably should have got a few more. But, he's going well, and he's obviously going to be really important for us over the next 4 days.
Mate, I was looking at him on the stream. He was putting a fair few over the grass, mate, so it didn't matter about hitting them along the grass. They were one bounce over the rope or they were going over the rope. Now, just on the picture that we can see on the walk, he's actually bowling and not batting, and it looks like a very young version of Greeny is on display.
Yeah, well, I think you think back to his first-class debut for West Australia, and we certainly picked him as a bowler. I think he batted 8 or 9 in that game for us, and I told the story today about facing him in the nets the day before the game, and it only took me 5 to 10 minutes of facing him in the nets to walk over to Justin, who was our coach, and said, we've got to play this kid, because we knew that there was something pretty special there, and he obviously took 5 wickets on debut, but it's obviously been his batting that's certainly progressed over the last sort of 12 to 24 months, and he's been outstanding for West Australia, particularly in Shield cricket. So you could have easily had a picture of him with bat in hand, but he's a genuine all-rounder. He can bat in your top four, and he's going to provide us some handy overs, and that's the really exciting part of what he's able to provide.
Now, Voji, you're about to sign that new contract, but in that, will there be a clause to say that you should earn a percentage of the IPL money to paid to any of your players? Because Jai Richardson, last time we spoke, hadn't received the big offer, but $2.5 million, not bad for him, but it'd be nice if you got some of that.
I'm not sure any coach can put that in a contract. It sounds pretty good to me, but it's terrific for Jai. I'm really pleased for him. He works incredibly hard. That's a life-changing amount of money, and that he'll be able to go over to the IPL, and really looking forward to seeing how he performs on that stage as well. And looking forward to seeing how he goes tomorrow night against New Zealand in the second T20. But, it's a life-changing amount of money, but he's a level-headed kid. And, I'm really pleased for him.
Any surprises or any disappointments that you thought maybe that player should have got picked up?
I thought Jason Berendorf was a chance after the BBL that he had, and certainly with the way that franchises looked like they were bidding, they were looking for fast bowlers. So whether he gets a replacement player position at some point throughout, but we always felt that Jai was probably the main one, certainly from Western Australia, that was going to attract some bidding. I don't think even in his wildest dreams that it was going to go for that amount. But in answer to your question, probably Dorf was the other one that we thought might have got an opportunity there.
Sheffield Shield is back starting tomorrow. You take on South Australia. The squad has been announced. Sean Marsh, Bancroft, Jake Carter, Hilton Cartwright, Cameron Green, Cameron Gannon, Liam Guthrie, Aaron Hardy, Josh Inglis, Matt Kelly, Liam O'Connor, Joel Parris, Sam Whiteman. So you've got a few players away on duties. There wouldn't be too many that have missed out on this squad.
Yeah, I think the really pleasing thing about the squad is that with 9 guys over in New Zealand, I think we're putting a really competitive team out against South Australia tomorrow. a lot of those guys, if not most, were in the hub with us prior to the Big Bash over in Adelaide, and performed really well. So we're really confident that the team that we're taking into tomorrow, a lot of the guys have got some good time under their belts in Premier Cricket, the ones that weren't involved in the Big Bash, and it's been nice to get back together as a group and be able to train over the last week or so. So, yeah, we're really looking forward to getting back and playing on our home ground at the Wacker, and, yeah, looking forward to getting stuck in tomorrow against South Australia.
It's going to be tight for spots when all of those players do return. Josh Phillippe, how are you going to play him? Because he's one that hasn't seen Sheffield Shield cricket for a while because of his IPL commitments.
Yeah, that's right. And obviously with another IPL coming up in the near future, we just have to try and map that out for Josh as best as we possibly can. He, along with a number of our guys, are in the position where they don't get those red ball opportunities as much as certainly they or we would like, purely because of the white ball schedule and the other franchises around the world, particularly the IPL and the timings of that. So it means that he doesn't play as much as he'd like to. I believe that he'll be available for part, if not the rest of the back end of our season for us. But, yeah, hopefully we'll be able to provide some opportunity there for him, and we'll see how he goes.
Mate, did you at all watch the cricket over there in New Zealand the other night? Because the Aussies had their worst result in short-form cricket, and, mate, the ball was moving around big time. It was quite incredible to see how much it was swinging late in that game. The Aussies couldn't handle it.
Yeah, Southie and Bolt, they were amazing, weren't they? In their conditions, they understand them and play them very well. And yeah, unfortunately, our top order didn't quite have an answer for it. But I think after 2 weeks of quarantine, not that that's ever an excuse, but I think you'll see a sharper Australia in the game tomorrow night. So looking forward to seeing how they bounce back, and hopefully, I think we had four West Aussies in there. Maybe we can sneak a couple more in and see if they can get a better result.
Mate, what is it about those conditions in New Zealand? And we even see it in England as well. And the conditions where the ball just seems to hoop. Now, I know juke balls are something that we've introduced here because we thought that it may well be the different style of ball with our traditional kookaburra balls that we were always pretty much using here in Australia. Why is it that you go to New Zealand, you see it do that, and you go to England, you see it do that, compared to most of the environments that we have to endure here in Australia, where we'll get a little bit of swing, but nothing like what we saw the other night?
Yeah, I'm probably not an expert in this, but yeah, certainly the overhead conditions, the pitch conditions, the amount of grass on the wicket, I think preserves the newness of the ball and allows it to swing for a little bit longer. But I think what we also saw in the Big Bash this year was the kookaburra white ball seemed to be able to swing for longer. So whether that's a modification that kookaburra themselves have made to allow the ball to, I guess, stay in condition for longer, and that the guys who are able to make the most of that swing have actually got it for a little bit longer. So it might be a combination of a few of those factors, but certainly, yeah, we saw some fairly big swing, particularly from those Kiwi bowlers the other night.
All right. Well, good luck with signing the new contract in, I'm hoping, the coming days. Thank you very much for talking to us on Sports Day, and we will have a chat to you next week.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Adam Voges here on Sports Day, and is going to front up in all three formats. Good news.
It is good news. Do you see a time where he could replace Justin Langer, or maybe the coach that does replace Justin Langer? Because I get the sense that Justin is not going to do it forever. We know Dizzy Gillespie's been one that's been around the scene for a long time.
Well, no one does it forever.
Exactly.
You know, there comes a time where you either hit your use-by date or you get marched out the door. So, you know, I think that there is always that, I think, circumstance that arrives. And I think that what he just described is that he's still only a young coach. Mm. 3 years into the gig, now with another 3 years forecast, which he's not quite signed the deal yet. But I think, you know, crossing a few T's and dotting a couple of I's, it won't be far away from being completed. And then he gets some more experience. Now, I suppose then is when the job comes up for grabs. Who is in the market? Who's available for it?
I'd say Andrew McDonald's, because he's coaching as we speak over there in New Zealand. So they do speak.
I mean, Dizzy Gillespie's a guy who's always been held in high regard. So, you know, you've got a situation where when the job becomes available, who's in the market and who is then willing to take on the job, because it's not an easy job. You're spending months and months and months on the road, or traditionally you have. I mean, I know it's been curbed at the moment given the world's conditions with COVID-19 and, you know, tours of South Africa and other things being changed and living in hub environments, which would probably be even more difficult than what it was in the past.
He needs one thing though, doesn't he?
A Sheffield Shield title.
We haven't had one for a long time.
A long time. Since I was a kid, it was, Hayes. I think back in 1989, I reckon, off the top of my head. I might be wrong, but someone can ring up and howl me down if you like. We'll clear a commitment. On the other side, we will touch base with our Wildcats coach, Trevor Gleeson. And normally it is on a Tuesday, but they were playing last night, and guess what? Ha ha! Old humble pie over there, Paul Hazelby, munching on his pie in a moment when we get Trev on the phone. It'll be brilliant. Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have Trevor Gleeson, the coach of the Wildcats, the winning Wildcats, and let's hope we can create some more news headlines. Gotta love your local, gotta love the Bottle-O. Trev, welcome to the program.
G'day, boys. How are we?
We're going all right. Probably not as good as you. Last time I spoke, I played you my spray that I gave your players. It wasn't directed as you. You obviously got that email and you played it to them, because they've been pretty good since.
Yeah, I just put it on repeat all the time while they were in the gym. So it was sunk into them nice and well. But look, the guys really responded well. Two good wins, and hopefully we can build from this.
Do you have a dartboard with all of those media experts' heads on it that you sometimes throw darts at?
Yeah, no, I just make sure I recognise the faces and just give them a great big smile and just give them an extra squeeze of the hand when I handshake, and just know the presence has been felt.
Yeah, no, I wasn't quite sure whether you could win all of them, but the performance firstly against Melbourne United, a pretty good effort to beat the undefeated team.
Yeah, it was great. The guys are really locked on, and to have, you know, that kind of game when we're still a little bit undermanned, and then, you know, Bryce taking over that second half, and really good contribution from the young fellas, Sherville off the bench. He was fantastic in that game.
One thing I didn't realise there was that you recruited LeBron James, because John Mooney, he played the perfect game, didn't he, last night against Sydney Kings? 30 points, 15 rebounds. He did everything. Went at 92.3%, two blocks to go with it as well.
Yeah, and I think he had four assists. He only missed one shot. I didn't realise until after the game. He only missed one shot. I think he made 12 out of 13 shots, including 3-3. So, yeah, he was super. And he's just starting to get that combination with Bryce. So they can either double-team Bryce and they leave John open, or they leave Bryce under single coverage, and then, you know, Bryce can do what he does.
Now, last night, me and Paul, we had a little bit of a discussion about this, and we were talking about Mooney and Cotton, and we said if they were standing there right now in the schoolyard, which one would you pick? I said Bryce Cotton every day of the week. He actually stuck his neck out and went for Mooney. That's how much impact he thinks that he's having for your team.
Wow, that's a big call. But, yeah, look, he's played seven games, I think six games. He's got double numbers in rebounds. He's been a great asset for us, just the right guy that we need. You know, he's not, you know, tomahawk dunks and all flash. He just rolls up his sleeves and goes to work. And, you know, he's having a fantastic season so far.
So if he sticks around and he has the sort of impact that we've seen that Bryce Cotton's had on the competition, great to see him get his visa during the week and what that might mean for your team in the future. But do you think that he could, say, maybe string together a track record that Bryce has got or not?
Yeah, without a question. He's, you know, remember, he's only 24 years old. He's just straight out of college. He's had a great college career. Normally, there's a transition period for the young guys to go into pros, but he's just come on and, you know, been like a pro for all his career. He's so professional what he does. He works hard at it. He buys into the system. He's a great teammate. So, yeah, he's been great, and I think he's going to continue that way for the whole season.
Our boy, our producer, Rob Beaver, doesn't believe he could make it in the NBA, thinks he's too small, but do you think if he continues to put up those sort of numbers, they'll take notice?
Yeah, without a question. I think Australia's on the map now, and everyone in the NBA looks at Australia with the league, with the guys that have come, you know, James Innes and Torrey Craig and LaMelo Ball have all made impacts in the NBA. So, yeah, it's a good one to have on your resume that you're in Australia and you're the leading rebounder. You certainly take note of that.
All right, let's talk about Bryce Cotton, because he was ill going into this game. How sick was he and how close did he come to not playing?
Yeah, look, I didn't think he was going to play, to be honest with you. That we really left it up to him, and it was the last minute. He didn't shoot around that day because he actually had an appointment with the minister to get his permanent residency. And so we put him on the court just to make sure he wasn't going to get dizzy or lightheaded or, you know, feel unwell. And he said he felt well, and he said, well, let's give it a crack there. And, you know, and then produce a game like that. He's unbelievable.
Yeah, sure, he just didn't want to get out of training and he wasn't feeling a bit sick in the tummy about what he might expect by going to the minister's office. Trev, what do you reckon? He might have just been a bit nervous.
Yeah, well, the few of the boys didn't see him for 3 days. So they reckon he went to Bali for 3 days and got his visa stamped and came back.
Yeah, well, everyone else is locked up. He had a good excuse to be out of the building. Now, are you actually out of the building yet? Are you moving around? Are you welcome back into society? Where are you at there?
Yeah, no, we're on the South Bank. It's the first day that we can actually go out and have a meal at a restaurant. So we're happy about that. And down on the Docklands, overlooking the Marvel Stadium right now and having a pizza and a nice and cold one, so I'm enjoying it.
So what does it all mean now for Bryce Cotton? How long until he becomes a true citizen and then you can find a replacement player?
Yeah, so he's got the permanent residence and now we can apply for citizenship with Bryce. So I'm unsure how long that period will take. It could be another month or so or longer. And look, we'll have a list of players ready and we're keeping an eye on guys overseas in Europe coming back and in the G League and in the NBA. So, you know, when he does come available, we'll certainly look at bringing a new player in.
There's been some good additions of the Bryce Cotton and Casper Ware matchup and they're at it again yesterday. What does he say sometimes in those moments when he trash talks?
Can you hear him?
Yeah, well, I actually did yesterday. He said, that's all you got. You do the same thing all the time. And then Bryce just gets up and says, well, I'm not the guy that keeps on changing teams and try to win.
Oh.
So, it was, yeah, a little bit of jawing back and forth. But you know, the biggest thrill you can do is the siren goes, you win the game and you shake a man's hand with a big smile on your face.
Exactly right. Now, when will we see Clint Steindl doing that?
Yeah, look, he's not far away. He won't play tomorrow. On Thursday. I don't even know what day it is now. But he won't play next game. He'll hopefully play on Friday night. Fingers crossed. But, yeah, we'll put him through a fitness test on Friday morning.
Must have been a good dinner tonight if you can't remember what day it is.
It's Wednesday, Trevor.
Hey,
Wednesday,
mate, it's
all
like
right?
Groundhog Day here. All you see is a basketball court and a hotel room. So.
Yeah.
Got to continue the Melbourne NBL Cup, that is. And you take on the Taipans next. What do you make of them?
Yeah, look, we played them in the semi-finals last year. They're very talented. They got Machado and Oliver. They're probably haven't had the start that they wanted to, but certainly very talented team, and hopefully we'll do well.
Beautiful, mate. Thank you very, very much for your time tonight. Appreciate it, buddy, and good luck.
Thanks, boys. You're on fire again.
Thank you very much, Trevor Gleeson there. And you should have told him that you didn't think that they'd win either of those two games, by the way.
I knew they'd beat Sydney. I wasn't sure about Melbourne.
You should have told him.
And that was fair enough. And I did have some doubts.
He wouldn't have felt bad if he had said that.
Melbourne as well. But we've got to give him some accolades too, because he's turned this around in the past. He's now the most winningest coach for the Perth Wildcats in their history. He keeps finding a way. He's had some good support staff. Mm. All those support staff have now got poached to other clubs. Adam Ford is one, and he continues to get it done. So I think we need to give him some accolades for what he continues to do.
Yeah, look, I've always given him accolades. I've been surprised that some around the building who know a lot more about basketball than me have actually been, you know, sort of sticking it into Trev. And then we have a few callers like Brendan who'll ring in and say, oh, Gleeson can't coach. And then the last time Brendan said that, they actually went on and won the championship. So all of a sudden he was a bit like you, he's eating the old pie, weren't you, Brendan? You're actually eating the pie. And the other bloke that I'm talking about who's just out there answering the phones right now, well, he's sort of been shaking his head, can't believe it, on the last couple of performances. Let's bring him in. Hey, Rob, come in here, mate. Come in here, Rob. Here he is. Turn that mic on.
Evening.
Now, John,
what have you
Mooney,
got to say for yourself?
He thinks he can play in the NBA. You don't.
I think there's a difference between when you say making it in the NBA and playing in the NBA. But there's a reason that
guys go undrafted. Now, the NBA scouts don't get everything right. Let me preface that. There are plenty of guys who have gone away, come back better players, et cetera, et cetera. But he's 6'9". Yeah, he's 111 kilos or listed 111 kilos, which is good. To me, the concern around John Mooney, as great a player as he is, and you can back me up on this, I was having conversations with you off air saying he's going to be a fantastic addition to the Wildcats. I don't know that he's got the athleticism. The 3-point shot so far in the NBA has actually looked pretty good. And when you look at versatility and the ability to be a stretch four in the NBA, fantastic. At 6'9", there are teams who play guys at that body shape, that height, at the center position, at the five. I would have reservations playing Mooney at a five. I don't think he's got the athleticism to go at the four. If you're looking at matching up with some of the really good players in the NBA, you're looking at Giannis Antetokounmpo. This is a guy that takes three steps.
Say that name, Hayes.
It's a guy that says Giannis. A guy that takes three steps from midcourt to the rim. Now, not everybody in the NBA can do that, but that's the type of guys he's going to have to go up against. I know we've had recent success. Obviously, look at your LaMelo, completely different position, completely different build, completely different scenario, being that he's a guy who's much younger as well. You've had guys like Jayshon Tate, who played with the Kings last season, go over and play in Houston under Will Weaver. Now, does he get that opportunity without Will Weaver? I'm not sure. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. And he's had some good games, but I don't know that these guys are going to be journeymen in the NBA. They might be a couple of years here and there and then fade out.
Just another quick one from me about Trevor Gleeson. You've been a little bit critical about what he gives by way of, you know, explaining certain circumstances. And are you of the view that he gives us something, or are you still...
I think there's, as a coach, when you come to the media, I think there's a fine line between giving direct answers, and this is not just for Trev, I should point out, this is for any coach or any administrator in the league. There's a fine line between giving the media what they need to know and maybe giving them what they should know where it doesn't negatively impact the team. A lot of the things I find that Trev says are not incorrect. I'm not saying that, but he might say things along the lines of, you know, our defense wasn't good enough. As a basketball purist, Trev, I just want a little bit more. Just tell me why it wasn't good enough. A couple of weeks ago, we had him on after they had those big wins and big loss against the Phoenix, and he said, you know, the rotations were late. We didn't come out with energy. That's tangible. To say something like the defense isn't good enough, I just think, as a basketball purist, I just want a little bit more, and he has been better in recent weeks.
All right, get back out there and answer the phones. Thank you very much for coming into the building. Great to have you in here, Rob Beaver. Great range, friendly service. They're independently owned by the locals. You've got to love your local. You've got to love the Bottle-O. We will clear a commitment on the other side. Waffle on Wednesday. Ash Prescott from the Claremont Football Club joins us now. Welcome back to Sports Day. Time now for Waffle on Wednesday. Some would say that we waffle every night here on Sports Day, but Ashley Prescott joins us. He is the Claremont coach. Welcome, Prezza. How are you going?
I'm going very well, thanks, lads.
Pre-season well and truly underway, mate. It's been pretty hot too.
It has been a bit hot, Carl, that's for sure, which is good. Gets the boys working hard. But it's progressing pretty well, Carl, and fortunately we can train at about 5:30, so yeah. Get that little bit of a sea breeze in, which takes a bit of the edge off it, fortunately.
Prez, are you feeling the pressure? Because the last coach before you got sacked after losing a grand final by 3 points.
I think pressure, Hayes, is something that when you become a coach or even a player, I mean, you blokes know that you tend to live with pressure. And the biggest pressure I had was when I was unemployed, Hayes, and I didn't know what I was going to do, because pressure with two young kids and a wife that you support is pressure. So the pressure to perform and do the best you can for your footy club, whether you're a player or you're not, is something I'm very, very used to, Hayes. So I'm really enjoying it.
Good answer. And it's good to have good people around you. It looks like you've built a good team. Anthony Jones, a former teammate of ours. Anthony Rock, of course, has been at Fremantle and many other clubs, an assistant coach. And Andrew Foster, also an ex-teammate of mine. And Darren Harper, too, a Claremont player who had a good career.
Yeah, it is. It's really pleasing to get, above all, really good quality people on board, because, you know, you want to set a footy club up with an environment that, you know, you can really help develop and work with the young people that you've sort of been given the privilege of coaching. So we're very comfortable with them, and really privileged as a football club to be able to attract some really good humans and guys that have had various experience in football over a long period of time.
So it's a good place to be at the moment, and we're getting along really well. And you know, there's new people, obviously. Anthony Rock's new to the Claremont Footy Club, but to re-engage some old Claremont players back to the club's been really pleasing too.
It shows that they've got a real passion to help younger players, doesn't it, Prezza, to come back out of the AFL system. Some of them, you know, you could think they'd be excused for being disgruntled by the whole system, but to go back, and I know waffle money as an assistant coach is not big money.
No, you're right, Hayes, and it probably speaks volumes of their character, because you can get a little bit disgruntled. And hopefully across Australia there's been, you know, a series of coaches that have probably through the COVID period have had something they're so passionate about taken away. But to actually swallow your pride and go back and really coach authentically with good intent that's not about the paycheck is really important.
Now, having a look at what is ahead for you when it comes to the challenges that are just around the corner, and of course the season not getting underway until around April, but in between now and then, what's going to happen for you?
We just get to continue on, Carl. We just recently had a training camp down in Albany for 3 days, so that was a really good experience to get the whole group down there as well as the coaches. And get to know each other a little bit better and do some hard training. So from here on in, it's really knuckling down into a sort of 5-6 week block of football. And again, there has been a lot of change. So, you know, we've implemented some slightly different things as far as a game style point of view. So it's really just trying to get better every day, Carl, and just refine what we're doing, continue to really train hard, get fit, with an eye towards practice matches in round one.
Talk to us about this camp, because we went on one when I first started to Mika Thara, and that was tough. You were there. It was very difficult. Was it similar to that, Prezza?
Well, no one lit up 3,000 acres like smoking the creek. Hey, how was that, eh?
Oh,
we could talk for a while about that. But, it was a camp that... We got down there, we camped at a very remote location. There was a series of activities that the team was broken up into roughly 5 groups of about 12. We were competing against each other. We were working hard and we enjoyed a bit of fellowship in the afternoon, Hayes, which I'm sure you'd be familiar with. So it was some hard work winding down to enjoying each other's company in a pristine part of Western Australia. And more importantly, part of that was a fishing competition. So towards the end, a little fishing competition for the boys as the sun was going down.
Sounds good.
I pop my own prize up?
I managed,
Carl, you won this.
Yeah.
I don't think I won, but yeah. I managed to catch a yellowtail kingfish off the beach.
Oh, nice fish.
On a Helco twisty.
A big one or a little one?
He was reasonably small, but of course that'll grow as the years go on, Carl. It'll get bigger and bigger. But it was good fun. In all seriousness, just a good opportunity to do what I just mentioned.
Sounds nothing like the Mika Thara camp that we went on. But let's talk about a few of your younger players that have gone back off the AFL list. Francis Watson, Anthony Treacy, and also Jason Carter. How are they faring through the pre-season?
All progressing really well, Hayes, and it's often a difficult transition coming off an AFL list and going back to that semi-professional environment. But they've really embraced it well. Francis, we know, is coming off a knee reconstruction, so he's still in that process of rebuilding and getting himself right. Jason Carter's been particularly impressive on the training track, and so has Anthony Treacy. So, yeah, those lads are doing well. Jake Padmore was another one. He found himself off the list at the Port Adelaide Football Club. And he's also come back. And it's good to have those Claremont lads get back involved. And we're looking forward to working with them and trying to help them become the best footed players they can be.
One of the big challenges for all State League clubs is the supplementary period. And you've got one player, Alec Waterman, who was your leading goal kicker last year, still training with the Bombers. Do you know much about whether they will pick him? And how difficult is that for your club, given how important he is to you?
Yeah, look, Kepler Bradley, the footy manager, he speaks from time to time to Essendon. And, of course, they don't give him a yes or a no because he's still training. And it's funny when you think of it. It's sort of in your head you have this conflict of interest because you want the best for Alec and the player, because ultimately his goal is to play AFL footy. So you're absolutely supportive on that front. But then you know that if it goes that way, you're losing a really good player. But no, we're just really rapt that Alec gets the opportunity at AFL level. And we're really hoping that he gets the opportunity to have a crack at AFL footy again.
Claremont are famous for their successful Colts program. What about some of the younger kids that might push up this year and challenge for spots?
Yeah, well, Van Ruin's one. I mean, a lot of people know about him. You know, young key forward, really likely. He's been training with the senior group. He can still go back and play Colts football. But just at the moment, the way he's progressing, you know, he's really pushing hard to potentially play round one. And there's probably a list of 12, Hayes. I won't go through them all, of graduating Colts that have come up into the senior group and are training particularly well. So it just adds a little bit more selection pressure and a bit more depth for the football club going forward.
The girls in the WAFLW kicked off last weekend. Do you have much interaction between, you know, the men and the women?
Yeah, we try to, Carl, and spend some time, you know, with the coaches, you know, sharing ideas and obviously logistically all operating out of the one facility on Davies Road. You know, there's a bit of cross-pollination. And it's something that we're really keen to as a football club, is continue to try and make it that one club mentality. So even things like coming up with similar standards and behaviours around the club is something we're looking to try and build on over time.
Good job, mate. Thank you very much for having a chat to us tonight. Take care, and we'll have a chat to you again down the track. Thanks, mate.
Good on you, lads. Cheers.
Ash Prescott on our Waffle on Wednesday. Nice to touch base with him, and we will regularly get around to our WAFL coaches as we head towards the start of the season that gets underway for Claremont when we're talking league footy. It's Steel Blue Oval, April 3. They will be taking on Swan Districts out there at Steel Blue Oval in Bassendean. We'll clear a commitment on the other side. We'll have a chat to John Greer, Junior Coordinator at the Joondalup Country Club. There's a fair bit going on in the world of golf, including that car crash that involved overnight time. Welcome back to Sports Day and Green to Green. And tonight we're getting into our golf for Barron O'Day, because the little moments are everything. And we have John Greer, who is the Junior Coordinator at the Joondalup Country Club, joining us tonight. Welcome, John. How are you, buddy?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Just tell me about the juniors. How many have you got rotating through up there at Joondalup at the moment?
Yeah, we've been doing pretty good. We've got a few in the go. So we've got about 35 full-time golfers here, junior golfers, who from the age of about 11 years of age through to obviously 18. So, yeah, doing pretty good.
All right, talk through some of those players that you do have in the program, and I understand your own son, Josh, is also a part of it.
Yeah. So Josh has been here since he's been 12 years of age. So he's now 19. So we get Josh Greer, obviously, and Connor McKinney, who are both +6 or +5 handicap golfers, obviously kind of leading the way for the younger generation. And then we've got quite a few coming behind that. So young kids like Tom Addy, who's going really good at the moment, 16-year-old kid who's off +3. And then we got another 3 or 4, all Rick Potgieter, again, 16-year-old kid off +3. And a few more younger ones. We've got Ian Pienaar coming through. And then, again, going down to the kind of younger ones again, we've got young Lachlan Hall coming through, who's another 15-year-old kid off scratch. So, yeah, going well.
It's looking pretty good. We do have the 2021 WA Amateur Competition fast approaching, 10th to 14th of March at Lakelands Golf Course. Who are some of the big names that we should see there?
Yeah, well, I think, obviously, Conor McKinney's got to be right up there. I believe Josh is actually going to be playing Queensland Open that week, so he won't be there. So he's flying over to Brisbane to play the Queensland Open. But Connor Aldrich, I would fancy, would be pretty high up. And obviously young Tom Addy, again, is really a kid to watch, who's a great temperament. So, yeah.
Just tell me about the academy and the mums and dads that are listening tonight who have got a child who loves playing golf or wants to get into the program. What's the process? What do they have to go through, and how many can you feasibly take?
Yeah, I mean, we still got space for more kids. We got academy here at the golf club. We've got a few. We've got 3 or 4 teaching pros here. Vernon Sexton Finks just joined the club as a as a teaching pro. And we've got Axel Donaldson, we've got Kerry Gray, and we've got Jess Speechley for the girls. But, you know, we got a lot of support here. We obviously got Joondalup Resort International, who are really, really good with the kids. So they support the kids from a, you know, giving them a really good facility to practice at. And also financially, you know, they give them range balls to practice with. The kids don't have to pay for those. So they make it as easy as they can for these kids to get here and to spend time and to practice and to work on their game. And whether they want to be a, you know, a social golfer, or whether they have aspirations of one day becoming a professional player, we've kind of got it all covered for them. So, you know, we try to make it fun, that we try to give the kids a chance to flourish and to, you know, be the best they can be.
So on that point then, John, if there is a mum or a dad out there, or even a kid who's tuned into Sports Day tonight and they want to get involved, how do they do it? What's the best way of going about it?
Best way of going about it is just to come down to the club. We have... If they come down to the golf club, even on a Saturday or a Sunday, they'll see we have junior clinics here from, realistically, from 9 o'clock in the morning there, and they'll see probably 50 or 60 kids and parents there, where they can try the game for the first time, or they can, you know, they can be part of the program from 6 or 7 years of age, where they actually begin to do some structured games and have some fun. If they want to join the golf club, then they just approach the golf club and we can arrange a junior membership for these kids. We have a 9-hole social membership for the younger ones. And then we also have the 18-hole membership for the most serious junior golfers. And that starts from anywhere from age 10, realistically.
Now, I hear that you are a very keen golfer yourself. And I hear also that you maybe had a round today. How'd you strike them, mate? Did you find any kangaroos in the bush?
I found plenty of bush today. Yeah, I wasn't there. I managed to take some money off my son, Josh, which is very unusual. But no, I'm more of a social golfer and I spend more time helping the kids than I do working in my own game, for sure.
When you say you're a social golfer, how's your handicap looking?
Nah, it's not looking great at the moment. So I play off 8 at the moment. So it's
that's pretty good.
It's enough to be competitive.
My co-commentator actually had a round of golf with my co-commentator here, and there's the par 3 there. And how close, Hayes? How close was that ball to going in the hole?
40 centimetres.
Yeah, it was a brilliant shot. And we've been really proud to gloat about it too, my friend. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Take care, and we will continue to plug your little program. Good on you, John.
Great. Thanks very much.
John Greer there for Barra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. Now, we'll clear a commitment on the other side. I'll come back and tell you what's on the program tomorrow here on Sports Day. That's all we've got time for tonight here on Sports Day. Great to have your company. Tomorrow night, Phil Matera will join us. He is our sports star of small business with his wonderful business called Matera Electrical. We'll touch base with David Short and we'll get inside Greyhounds WA and find all of the latest news there. Riley O'Brien will join us from the Adelaide Crows and we'll touch base with our Perth Glory ahead of their upcoming clash here on Sports Day from 6 o'clock tomorrow. We'll see you then.